Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Yeah, except I can't read. Oh, and I have all my baby teeth still.
Yeah, you have tiny teeth.
Can't you tell after you there?
I can see that. I live in a dream world, so.
So no need for reading.
It's all good.
It's for losers. So we don't actually love books. We just claim to love books so people will think we're cool.
That's right. We think it makes us look smart.
Yeah.
We haven't actually read any of these books.
That's very true. I'm factually illiterate.
I've had a turn-of-the-century English girl read them all to me at bedtime.
And you go to sleep and she sews the holes in your house?
Yes.
So this week we read Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie.
Indeed we did.
A classic of literature.
So they tell me.
Yeah, theoretically. And we don't really have any research or facts or anything for this book because
we didn't think of it in advance.
It doesn't apply to it. It doesn't seem like. I guess I will mention that Ben and I both read the book version of Peter Pan, but it was a play first, that aired in 1904
and 1905. That aired in
1904. and it became a book in 1911. So, but we both read the 1911 book version.
Yes.
Originally titled Peter and Wendy, but now it's Peter Pan.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Because that's how everybody knows the story.
Yeah.
Thanks to Disney, really.
You think thanks to Disney?
Conjecture.
I guess I will add that when I was a little kid, Peter Pan was my favorite movie. Mom said every time we went to the video store, which still existed when I was a child,
right.
I would always rent Peter Pan. Hmm. And it shocked me when I watched it as an adult and didn't remember a fucking thing.
It's weird. I don't actually remember you being obsessed with it.
Apparently I watched it 10, 15, 20 times.
Yeah, go figure.
And then... You didn't remember a single thing, so...
Well,
as... very Peter.
Yeah, as you do. How kids roll, man.
Stupid kids. we also decided that the podcast was in desperate need of levity after last week.
After The Road.
Which I pretty much entirely forgot in the past week.
Also very Peter Pan-like. So Peter Oops. Pan... Peter Pan is to the road.
Yes.
As Peter Pan peanut butter is to getting stabbed in the fucking heart. I don't know. I'm working on this whole analogy thing still.
As a continent full of ash. As Peter Pan peanut butter is... Wait.
Hold on.
Peter Pan peanut butter is to Peter Pan as... I actually find that peanut butter quite whimsical.
As the road is to somebody who's allergic to peanut butter.
There you go. Eating peanut butter. Someone who's allergic to peanut butter eating peanut butter.
Yes, that would be their own personal the road.
I feel like we don't really have to do a ton of setup, because if you don't know this story, then I don't know what your life has been.
I'm pretty much assuming that you know the gist of the story, that you've probably seen at least one of the movie versions, and very possibly read the book, or the play, or saw the play.
Yeah.
Because it still gets performed, especially youth theater things.
Yep.
A lot. And, the plot of the book is surprisingly close to the Disney movie.
Yeah, to what I remembered of Peter Pan already, there were no surprises.
Yeah. So, I guess what we're saying, if you don't know, we're not going to fill you in this week.
Oh, snap. Yeah, so it's pretty obviously a children's story, pre-YA... Both in the fact that this was written before YA was a genre,
mm-hmm.
and that the children are not quite preteen, teen age yet.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how old they are, but I'd be surprised if any of them were more than 12.
Yeah. Wendy's she is the oldest, so right. she may be 11 or 12. Peter's probably 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And then her little brothers are, Michael's 4, I think they actually say.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, but yeah, a lot of little kids running around. So, I mean, that just kind of, by default, puts you in the YA genre. It was amusing me the other day when I was thinking about the widespread of YA and how, like, you know, if your character's basically in 0 to 20, your book's considered YA.
Right.
But then you have, like, Peter Pan, and then you have, like, Speak, and then you have these, like, insane YA books in, like, dystopian futures where the main character's running around, like, murdering everybody.
Right.
Like, how are these all part of the same genre? Like, I think the system is a little broken here. Because I feel like these things are not comparable.
Yeah, it's pretty... I mean, I guess when the unifying factor of your genre is that the characters are in a certain age range...
Yeah.
There's a lot of room for them to actually be doing stuff or having stuff happening to them.
Yeah. That fit into other categories.
Right. Because Matilda does not equal The Hunger Games.
Correct. That's a fair assumption.
Just for example.
Enough said. But we do have a plot synopsis this week.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, Peter Pan is a dick.
There you go, folks. He is totally a dick, yeah. By the way.
He's not meaning to be a dick, but he is a dick.
Yeah, we'll give you details on that in here.
So the setting, Neverland. If you haven't heard of Neverland, I don't even know.
I don't know where you've been.
Yeah,
seriously.
Like, I keep thinking, why do we need to tell people these things? Like, I'm sure you already know this.
They know it only in connection to Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch, God. If nothing else.
Oh, God. Yeah, not like that.
Well, it's not like that. I'm just saying, like, people are aware of that term.
I'm just saying, if that's the only term you're aware of it being used, it is not like
that. Well, no, it's not like that.
That's all I'm saying. Point of view tenses is kind of interesting. We have a third-person narrator who's omniscient because they follow multiple characters around and also know that something that happens at the beginning is going to be relevant at the end.
Right.
But they're not entirely reliable.
They have their own thoughts and opinions on how things are working, and at least once even interferes in the story, technically.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a couple of kind of interesting moments with the narrator.
But Gab's actually made a good point when we were discussing this earlier, that it's kind of reminiscent of the Roald Dahl or J.K. Rowling thing, where there's kind of inserting a comment. Well, it's more than here and there. It's more like Roald Dahl and when he's doing it at his most, except for the whole book.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminded me of Roald Dahl, and then when I read the first Harry Potter book, I was reminded of Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
So I kind of threw J.K. Rowling in there.
Same.
And when I was reading this book, I was like, oh, maybe he's kind of the inspiration for that. Because the narrator is definitely, you know... Well, the children were bad, so they didn't deserve a warm welcome home.
But they got one anyway.
Yeah. Or when he's talking about the pirate attack on the Indian tribe, and he says, you know, historians will have to consider how to view this in the future.
Yeah.
Because goes in here like, what?
Or Wendy got Peter's button, and this will be important later in the story, and
yeah.
A chapter or two later, and the button saved your life.
Just like I told you.
Just like I told you. Or he whispered, he didn't want to keep the children's homecoming from Mrs. Darling because he didn't want them to get the warm surprise reception. So he whispered it. The narrator whispers it into her ear and she wakes up thinking she just had a dream of the children coming.
Yeah.
And is confused for a moment.
Yeah. Or even when the pirates are very first introduced and the narrator says, well, let's just get a feel for Captain Hook's character, so let's make a pirate. Oh, let's say this guy. stumble and fall into him.
Right.
And then Hook just kills him on the spot. And then he's like, yep, there you go. I was like, hey, you just, like, killed that guy.
Actually, you know what else? The chapter where... And so this is a little bit less on the narrator, more on general writing style, I guess. But the chapter where... On the pirate ship, where Hook was very concerned with form, kind of, now that I'm thinking about it, reminding me a little bit of the Princess Bride...
Oh, uh-huh.
...kind of style of storytelling. There's just, like, these silly asides that have nothing to do with the actual action.
Yeah.
But that are very much a thread for a good chunk.
Yeah, so who's the protagonist?
Peter Pan? Wendy?
We don't really know.
We're not sure.
We always, you know, there's the, oh, if their name is the title, then it's a good chance they're the protagonist. But then we also go for the who changes and grows, which is what led us to conclude that Nick was actually the protagonist in The Great Gatsby.
Right.
Instead of Gatsby. And in this case, Wendy is really the one who grows up, and Peter Pan stays the same, so...
Yeah, this is not a story that is rife with character development, I would say.
Yeah.
And the original title was Peter and Wendy.
Yes.
As you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So.
And, I mean, a lot... The action can only happen because of Peter, because he teaches the kids to fly and takes them to Neverland. Neverland basically revolves around him.
Yeah, it's kind of a product of children's imaginations.
Uh-huh.
And since... Peter Pan is, like, the king of children or something.
Yeah, because he's the one who never grows up.
Right.
But I did think it was kind of interesting that Wendy seems to be the only one who ever left an impression on him. Because at the end, when he's supposed to come back every year, even when he forgets for multiple years, he does always come back.
Right.
Remembering that he's supposed to get her. Even if he doesn't remember that, you know, it's her daughter now or whatever.
Right.
So Wendy did do something to Peter Pan. Not entirely sure what.
Just implanted the idea of having a mother, temporarily at least, was useful.
Got it into his head enough that he can't entirely ditch it. So I guess let's go ahead and talk about both of these potential protagonists.
Okay. So Peter is a dick.
Yeah.
He's... amoral and can't pay attention to things. That's the main thing. Also, he's arrogant.
Yeah, the narrator actually points out multiple times how arrogant Peter is, and how it's not a very attractive quality.
Yes.
It is actually the one trait he has that makes Hook hate him so much.
Right.
He's
very self-centered.
Yes.
He is... not so much obsessed with himself. He's not that kind of self-centered and arrogant. He's the kind where he thinks of what he wants, and then that's what he gets. And that's the only thing he's interested in.
Yeah, they were saying on Neverland that, you know, if Peter imagines a table full of food and pretends to eat it, then that's him eating.
Right.
Like, his imagination is so over the top that it trumps reality.
Right.
So, like, for example, when his shadow gets, when he gets parted with his shadow and he's trying to get it back on, he can't, and Wendy sews it on, and then as soon as he and his shadow are a thing again, or, like, are back together again, instead of thanking Wendy, he immediately goes, oh, I managed to do this all on my own. And
look
then
what I figured out.
The cleverness of me. And she's like, Peter, you douche. He does stuff like that, and...
Yeah. And as far as the amorality goes, so I'm being careful here to say amoral and not immoral.
Yes.
Hopefully you're all hip to what that means. But basically, he's neither good nor bad because he doesn't really have a concept of it.
Yeah.
He does what he wants, which includes killing people sometimes.
Yeah.
He doesn't really take care of the other children as much as he just bosses them around because he likes having minions, I think.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways we see his lack of, I guess, normal human character is that he's really the only human who can get along with the fairies or the mermaids, who would ordinarily not really have anything to do with humans. Right. Like, he's the only one who can speak to the fairies.
Right, he understands the fairies.
And the mermaids won't even let anyone else get within speaking distance. So, I mean, there's kind of a... there's a little bit of a tradition of storytelling that I think some authors now relate to, but that is seen less often now, but where, like, fairy creatures were these strange, otherworldly things that don't really think the same way people do, and now when you see a fairy in a story, I think they're usually a little more humanized.
Yeah.
And so, I think Peter is supposed to come across as a little fairy-like himself.
Yeah, because, like, distant, weird fairies were totally the thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Renaissance England, if you mentioned a fairy, you wouldn't imagine, like, this cute little fluttering thing flying around. People would be like, oh, crap. Like...
Yeah, if the fairies were coming, that was bad news.
Yeah, you better plan a cross and ward that fucking fairy off.
Exactly.
All the stories about, like, you know, the fairy feasts where if you eat anything, then you're their prisoner forever.
Right,
and all that
yeah.
stuff. And they steal your babies and all that, so...
Right.
Yeah, fairies are typically not extremely positive. Yeah, and in this story... I like the way the narrator describes it, where they are a little tiny, flying around, glowing creatures.
Right.
But they are not big enough to hold two emotions at once. So they're either entirely good or entirely bad.
And it can change at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. Yeah, they can do something wonderful and then all of a sudden just go to bad. So Tinkerbell is... also kind of by definition amoral, because she's either one or the other.
Yeah, I think, I tweeted that she was an amoral bitch, but then I had to catch myself and say that so was the rest of the cast, for the most part. Because I didn't want to be unfair. But, yeah, she's kind of similar to Peter in some ways, and I think that's part of why we're supposed to think Peter of as fairy-like, to some degree.
Yeah, he's definitely not like all the other kids.
Yeah. And so Wendy, our other potential protagonist...
Uh-huh.
Feeling very alliterative this week for some reason.
Potential protagonist.
Yes. She is a proper turn-of-the-century English girl.
Yes.
She's quite proper.
She's very... Yeah, when she wakes up and there's a strange boy in her room crying, instead of freaking out, she's just like, boy, why are you crying?
Yes.
I'll sew your shadow back on.
She's like, you tried to stick it on with soap, you idiot. What a boy thing to do.
I was like, who ever tries to stick anything on with soap?
I'm guessing soap technology has changed in the last 100 years.
Because that makes no sense.
She is very much a beacon of old-school femininity, I would say.
Yeah. She goes to Neverland to be a mother.
Right, of a bunch of kids who are within a couple years of her own age, for the
yeah.
most part.
Yeah.
But...
And there's some humor in, like, you know, what she thinks a mother is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... The one instance I think where the narrator commented on it was when they had an imaginary lunch and she made everyone take a nap for half an hour and they couldn't get back in the water.
Right, even though it was imaginary.
Yeah, and the narrator points out if she had been more experienced that she wouldn't have done that.
Right.
But, yeah, she and Peter play mother and father, but...
Yeah.
She at least has more of a concept of what it is.
That's true. And, I mean, she's still... I mean, she's a child. She's probably the least childlike of the children,
uh-huh.
but you definitely get the impression that she is kind of playing house while she's in Neverland.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is the best game of house ever, because I actually get to take care of all these boys. Which, to me, seems like it would ruin the game.
Oh, my God.
But then they didn't have the internet back then, so who knows... Maybe they were that bored.
Well, there was a comment about how, like, you know, they had their little house under the hill or whatever, and
uh-huh.
and all the boys would go out and have adventures, and Wendy rarely saw the outside of the house because she was caught up in cooking for the boys and cleaning the house and, you know, darning all their socks. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, I'd fucking go insane.
I would venture to say that if this story had been written in 2011, she probably would have had a more active role in the adventuring.
Yeah, there probably would have been a couple more girls running around, and she would have been allowed to do something.
Almost certainly. If there'd been a mother-type character, then there would have been a couple of other gals doing a little bit more, I would think. Maybe not. I don't know. Not every author has a clue.
As we have as we've discovered. And that really is the, I mean, to skip ahead for a moment here, the feminist issue, which you can sometimes expect in books of this age, not all the time, but Wendy's main role is as a mother, and she doesn't really go on any adventures, and she always stays out of the fighting. And we do get a brief glimpse of, Tiger Lily, who's part of the Indian tribe on the island, and she is a princess in her own right and commands a group of people and totally refuses to marry anybody, so...
Right, because she wants her power, man.
Yeah, she's too badass for that. But then we only get to see her, like, twice.
And so... I guess some of the other characters we're dealing with, unless you had something else to say about Wendy, perhaps?
No, I think I'm good.
Wendy's brothers, I guess. I'll hit them first since we're talking about the kids right now. But John and Michael, and for that matter, kind of the rest of the Lost Boys.
Yeah, none of them really have super distinctive personalities.
Michael's the baby, he's the youngest. John... I'm struggling to come up with a distinguishing characteristic.
Is he the one who was interested in being a pirate at the very beginning of the book?
I think so. He was very briefly considering piracy when Hook made the offer for two of them to be cabin boys.
But then he was too dedicated to England.
Yes, that was why that chapter was so very British. There was the good form, and then there was the, wait, could we still be good citizens of the king? No, your oath would involve renouncing the king.
Saying down with the king.
Down with the king, yes. So, oh, well, no, then we can't do that.
Yeah, John says, well.
It's like, this exchange has been so British. Like, in a very cute way.
Yeah. And that is one thing that I recall the Disney movie, at least doing in particular, is making John and Michael more drawn-out characters.
Yeah, they tried to, you know, the couple of movie versions, even Hook, for that matter, which doesn't have the same group of Lost Boys,
right.
But, like, they've at least tried to give each boy, like, that one character trait that movies often do with, or even books, for that matter, with an ensemble cast, so you can at least tell them apart.
Yes, you tell one from the other. It actually reminded me a little bit of Lord of the Flies, because you're, like, the twins who, like, always talked at the same time, and then, like, the unfortunate fat one.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is, like, Lord of the Flies, but whimsical.
And Peter probably does a better job of taking care of the little ones than the Lord of the Flies boys did.
He kills a lot of people.
That's true.
Maybe Neverland's a bloodbath, too.
Well, that's possible. We don't know how many boys are going down in these fights.
Because the narrator seemed to imply at the beginning of the book that Lost Boys did die sometimes in battle, so I don't know about that one.
Yeah. We have, there was one Lost Boy, Toodles, who has a ridiculous name, but so do all of them, who was supposed to be just slightly... less serious than the rest of them, or taken less seriously than the rest of them. Mostly we have the narrator's word for that. I only bring it up because he mentions him a couple of times, and then he's the one who ends up being a judge when they all grow up.
Yeah.
So, just, I don't know. That might tie into the themes. We're not sure.
Yeah.
So, to round out Wendy's family, Mr. and Mrs. Darling, the parents.
Yes.
Mrs. Darling is basically a mother as well.
A mom who loves her kids.
Yep, that's her main trait. And Mr. Darling is a ridiculous dork, yeah. Turn of the century style, though.
My favorite thing about Mr. Darling was when the kids were born and he had to figure out the finances to see if they could keep them.
Right.
Well, let's see, if we spent less on this and this and started eating this and then spent this on her, we can keep Wendy. And then he goes, oh, but what if she gets sick? And then he has to, like, refigure it all, like, how much they'd spend on doctor's visits.
Michael barely made the cut.
Yeah. He squeaked in just under the line. I actually thought that would come up again at the end when they decided to adopt all the Lost Boys. Like, can we afford to keep them? But by that point, Mr. Darling was just...
He's a ridiculous person, yeah. Basically.
Well, and then the other thing he does is that after the kids disappear, he feels like it's all his fault because he sent Nana, the dog, down to stay in her kennel instead of guarding the children. And so his penance is to sit in the kennel and never leave it until the kids come back.
He's like the kennel carried to his work.
Yeah, so he can still work. People think he's like really interesting, so I was like inviting him to dinner parties. Like, as long as he's in the kennel.
I really enjoyed that role.
Yeah, that was so ridiculous.
That was very silly.
Yeah, and Mr. Darling's other thing is people always have to respect him. So whenever he thinks that someone's not showing him respect, he gets really upset.
Yes.
Which is why he puts Nana away in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Because he's always afraid the dog doesn't respect him.
Or when the Lost Boys show up and want to be adopted, he's upset because they're asking Mrs. Darling, but not him.
Yeah.
But once they reassure him that his opinion matters, then...
He's all for it.
Like, he was on the verge of tears. And I was like, oh, okay, well, if I'm important, then you can all stay. You can stay in our drawing room. I don't even know if we have one, but we'll say we do.
Let's go look for it.
We'll just call a room a drawing room, and you can stay there.
Yeah. Mr. Darling is ridiculous.
And Nana, the doggy.
Newfie.
The doggy. The Newfie nurse.
You know how much we like Newfoundland, guys.
That's right. They're the best.
Pilot and Nana.
That's right.
We're going to have to buy two Newfoundlands now.
Well, they have names for them.
Nana's awesome in the fact that she can actually nurse and take care of children, but she's a dog.
Right. And by nurse, we mean nanny.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. Not like, yeah.
In case.
Any creepy image popping into your head. No, she like tucks the kids in and gives them their medicine and walks them to school and... She got hired because she used to find negligent nannies in the park and then go to the house and tell the mothers that nannies were bad at their jobs.
This dog is awesome. She can tie knots. I don't know how that works. Even in a fantasy story.
Yeah.
And she doesn't quite talk, but apparently can give you very deep, meaningful looks where you basically just hear all the words.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like doggy telepathy or something.
I love Nana. I guess we just have Hook left.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hook.
James Hook.
He's supposed to be like the most evil of all evils, but all the characters in this book are a little too ridiculous to like be 100% evil.
Yeah, he's slightly absurd. Actually, the adults are pretty much absurd.
Uh-huh.
And the kids are... Kids, like, you could argue Peter Pan is just a really highly amplified kid, or that he's a fairy and not a person.
Yeah.
Whereas the adults are definitely absurd.
Yeah. So, and the pirates are out of control.
Yeah, so Hook is kind of a caricature of a pirate to some degree.
Yeah.
Like, he has the crazy reputation, and he hooks the guy to death just for bumping into him. Early
in
the book.
And his eyes glow red when he kills people.
Yes.
The demon eyes?
But at the same time, he has a couple of these little quirks. I mean, like, his issue with Peter is not so much that the boys... I mean, I guess they do battle with the boys sometimes.
Yeah.
And at one point, Peter cut his hand off.
Yeah.
Thus necessitating the hook. But that's not what upset him. It's because Peter's so arrogant.
Yeah.
It's like an attitude thing. It just really bothers him.
Yeah, he's talking about how he goes to poison Peter and... He almost, you know, felt sorry or, like, felt some compassion and left and didn't poison him. But then the way Peter was sleeping was just so arrogant.
He went to sleep with a laugh on his face.
That he had to poison him. Like, what?
And he's terrified of this crocodile, which swallowed a clock. You can hear it ticking whenever it's nearby.
Uh-huh.
And then we've kind of mentioned this obliquely, but he's obsessed with good form, as it turns out.
For, like, one chapter.
Right, yeah.
But it is a pretty funny chapter.
Yes, his musings on form. He's like, oh, maybe Peter Pan has good form. Maybe Smee and Peter Pan have good form, and they don't even know it, which is the best kind of good form.
Yeah, because he's thinking about good form so much, and then he starts going, but thinking about good form is bad form, and he's freaking out. Actually, the other thing I was going to mention about Hook is that he decided that the height of fashion was Charles II's style. So he wears, like, the tights and the bloomers right. and the, like, the curly hair and all that stuff. Just Google Charles II and, like, it's Hook, but with black hair.
Right.
That's so ridiculous to... That was just a really funny, like, piece of information for me. Because when I think of, like, dignified evil man, I don't think of, like, Charles II Reformation like, fashion.
Right.
So.
And probably no one would outside of that time period.
Yeah.
That was probably something where even 100 years later, people were like, look at that portrait and like, dude, really?
Why the hell do people do that? What the shit?
Back into the moral issues.
Yeah, we have mentioned that Tiger Lily is, I'm going to go ahead and say Native American,
mm-hmm.
and the tribe, that her tribe is, but in the books they're referred to as Redskins.
As, I mean, is not shocking from an English writer at that time period.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in 1905, calling Indians a Redskin is not...
Yeah, it's...
It, I mean, to a modern sensibility, is kind of jarring at first. Like,
yeah.
What?
I mean, it's not as jarring as some things. It's definitely old-fashioned and probably rude in most contexts.
Well, the thing that I found more offensive was he alternatively called the Redskins Pickaninnies, which is also a racist term for black people.
Yes,
and it's just
is.
Like... What the fuck is happening here? That is not okay, dude.
J.M. Barrie, what is wrong with you?
The Pickaninny tribe says things, you know, like... There was... I think it was right before the fight scene between them and the pirates, where he said something about, if they had been civilized, they would have realized that
right.
they could have done this, but they couldn't. And I'd say, like, overall, he doesn't go out of his way to be racist about them.
No, he just... It's less of a, hey, this group is inferior, and I mean, make sure everyone knows it, and more of a just, ah, these are what these silly primitives are like. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
More of that kind of racism.
It's still bad, but...
Right. Yeah, not... Certainly not excusing it, but contextualizing it somewhat, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean... In context just of the most basic children's games, like, well, you know, kids play pirates and think pirates are awesome, so there's
right.
pirates on Neverland. And then, I don't know if it's as much of a thing anymore, actually, I haven't talked to any kids who run around and play games recently, but cowboys and Indians used to be a pretty big thing.
Right.
Surprised
there are no cowboys on this island.
Yeah, that fight the Indians,
right.
but... kids at least used to play that game all the time, and so you can see why they're there. And so there's, like, a reason why the pirates and the Indians are both there, because of, you know, the tie into children's
imagination.
Right, right. And it's not just to be, like, lol.
Right.
Dumb savages. But sometimes he kind of does say, basically, savages.
Right, I mean, the main thing with them is that it's just not a very sensitive rendition by modern standards.
Yeah. And actually, I will give J.M. Barrie credit for being less racist than the Disney version of...
Yeah.
Because I don't know if any of you guys remember, you can go look it up, but there's actually a song in the Disney Peter Pan called What Makes the Red Man Red?
Oh, yeah.
And it starts with, why does he ask you how? And one of the verses is something like, let's go back a million years to the very first Injun prince. He kissed a girl and started to blush, and we've all been blushing since. Yeah, hearing that song as an adult, I was like, holy fucking shit. This is like the most racist thing I've ever heard. And it's in a children's movie. And like, no one ever talks about it. So, J.M. Barry, apparently less racist than Walt Disney.
Well, that probably isn't shocking, to be honest. Disney not exactly known for its sensitive racial treatment. Especially, I don't know, before now, more or less. I don't know. Are they even still considered to be any good at that?
I don't know.
People love to nitpick Disney, so it's hard to tell.
People would fight with you on the issue of that, I think.
I think probably.
But at least they do have characters of color in their movies since the 90s who right. are, like, right. main characters.
Right.
I will give them that. yeah, and you don't have, like, an Indian woman in this book looking at Wendy and being like, you can't dance, squaws have to gather firewood, or whatever the fuck she does to
yeah, right.
movie, so there's, you know, there's an improvement there.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Thebes?
I guess that's where we are, all right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so we kind of had a problem this week with themes.
Yeah, we don't know if this book has a theme. I mean, it has a couple of consistent strings of thought, I guess, but the ending is kind of weird.
Yeah, we weren't really sure what message we were supposed to get from it.
Yeah.
So, as far as, you know, never-ending childhood goes, we weren't really sure if the theme was that's good or that's bad.
Yeah, because Peter doesn't change.
Yeah.
And you would think if the message was supposed to be children need to grow up, that Peter Pan would have left Neverland to come grow up. And the Lost Boys were like, oh man, we've been had the week after, like within a week of getting back. Though then they kind of got over it and just went ahead and grew up.
Yeah.
Like you lose your powers of flight and the world is less fantastical to you.
Yeah, and they were saying how, you know, like, they all just grew up to work in offices and be born people.
Right. But then on the other hand, Wendy grows up and is... It's okay, because she's one of the people who likes to grow up. And gets to be a mother, which she wanted to be.
And she's a good mom, and she still, like, has the imagination and can tell the fantastical tales to her daughter.
Yeah, and she feels bad that she can't really be part of Neverland anymore, I think, too. She's definitely upset when Peter comes back and she's an adult. And so, but, like, just her line of female descendants keep going back to Neverland with,
yeah.
with Peter, like, till the end of time, as far as I know.
Yeah, and I don't know. It is, it's kind of weird because it ends with, you know, her daughter going off to Neverland and, like, pretty much everyone in the story is either a grown-up or dead. And then it's like, oh, yeah, and then her daughter's going to have a daughter and she's going to go off to Neverland with Peter once Wendy's out of the picture. And,
right.
And then it kind of ends and you're like, what? What?
it is a weird, bittersweet ending.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't really expect, I think, being familiar with the Peter Pan stories I was familiar with before I read the book.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, that's weird. Like, because it's not, I almost want to say ambiguous, but it's not really that ambiguous. We know it happens. It's just strange that's a choice.
Yeah, you'd expect Barry it to made. End with the Darlings adopting the Lost Boys, and now they found a home.
Right.
And then that's the end.
That would make sense if the theme was maybe motherhood.
Yeah.
Which is
something
also a candidate.
We grabbed out of there because, you know, Wendy goes because they keep saying Peter Pan really needs a mother. The Lost Boys need a mother.
Right.
And Mrs. Darley even points out, you know, Wendy needs a mother. So they're talking about how everyone needs a mother.
Right.
To watch over them and take care of them and all of that.
And she does, and they seem to like having her around.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Peter seems to decide that that's not something he's interested in having. Well, he tries to keep her in Neverland, actually. So I guess I guess he wouldn't mind having a full-time mother.
Which is why I think, yeah, Wendy's significant for the fact that she is able to do something to Peter that he wants to keep her around, because he basically doesn't give a shit if anyone else comes or goes. Except for Wendy, basically.
Right, yeah. It's, I mean, I'm sure there's just a... I'm sure when he needs more Lost Boys to do battle with the pirates or whatever, he goes and finds a couple.
Yeah.
when five of them die, he goes and recruits a few more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to say.
I mean, there is kind of just the, you have to grow up.
Right.
Because the book does start with all children grow up except one.
Right.
And that's how it ends, too, is, yeah, eventually everyone does have to grow up. So maybe it's just a tale about that. Like, you know, here's all the fun you can have, but you will eventually have to become an adult.
Yeah, maybe.
And Wendy, I mean, at least gets to hold on to, like, some of the fantasy of her childhood by telling stories about it, but...
Maybe that's the moral of the story. When you grow up, try to retain some of your childhood sense of wonder.
Yeah, because, I mean, he mentions that, like, John, as an adult, like, can't even tell stories to his kids.
Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of a little bit of both.
Moral of the story, don't be a boring adult.
Yeah. Don't suck ass.
Seems like a solid moral to me.
Don't suck ass. That's the moral of
the Try to live my life by that. Try to suck as little ass as possible.
Tell my kids. Because obviously I have to become a mother now. Any points of interest we haven't talked about?
You mentioned the...
Yeah, so... this book was, like we said, originally a play... And in the stage version, Mr. Darling and Hook are played by the same actor, which I discovered when the newest iteration of the Peter Pan movie came out, and Jason Isaacs played both Mr. Darling and Hook. And so when I read the book or think about the story, I kind of try to keep that in mind, because it does bring in an interesting element.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a choice, and I mean, assuming that it's actually in the play that it's supposed to be the same actor.
I think it is.
As opposed to, well, the first time they did this, they were too cheap to pay two guys. But, I mean, even if that was how it came about, that still seems to be sending a certain message, you know?
Yeah. I mean... children's imaginations always tie back into their real life, maybe.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the big bad guy is someone they know. Or maybe because they were all pissed at their dad for banishing Nana, and he was a bad guy, he became the bad guy in Neverland.
Right. And how extreme a child's view of a adult, a parent, or an older sibling or something can be from moment to moment.
Yeah, and actually I was just thinking how when you're really young, basically the only adults you know are your parents.
Right.
So whenever you have like a fantasy, maybe all the adults actually look like your parents and you just don't realize it.
Yeah, there you go.
Some kind of commentary there.
Yeah. That was an interesting... It does put an interesting spin on how you would interpret it.
Yeah.
Seems like a good thing to write about, maybe. I don't know.
Essay ideas, guys.
That's right. So, strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
Yeah.
It was, like, clever, fantastical storytelling.
Uh-huh.
Kind of right away, because you have Nana being the nurse in, like, one of the first couple paragraphs, and you kind of have Neverland set up as this place that exists in dreams that they can then go visit. Oh, and they can fly. But, I mean, just all the quirky thoughts from the narrator, for sure. I really enjoyed that stuff.
Yeah, and that stayed constant throughout. Like, the narrator was saying really goofy shit, like, the entire book.
Right. It had comments on everything.
Yeah. When we were mentioning one of the things at the end, when he was really pissed at Mrs. Darling, because she still liked her kids, and then decided, well, I can't really be mad at her for that, and a couple pages later says, Mrs. Darling is my favorite.
Yeah.
You may like Peter or Wendy, but Mrs. Darling is my favorite.
That's right.
And that was very consistent throughout, and was consistently entertaining.
Yes. The weakness, and this wasn't really something that detracted from my enjoyment of it, but you could argue there's no character development in this story.
Yeah, not...
Certainly not much.
Ton. I'd say Wendy has the most, which is why she seems the most protagonist-y.
Yeah.
And Peter Pan is kind of more of a dick than I remembered.
Right.
And at times you were kind of like, what is your problem? Like, please remember things that happened to you. That
happened to you yesterday. Or 5 minutes ago in a couple of cases.
Yeah, they're like, he'll, like, kill a bear and wander off, and then, like, wander back 10 minutes later and be like, oh, look, there's a dead bear. Dude!
Peter! Hey, ADD boy.
What are you doing?
Or when they were flying to Neverland, he flew ahead a couple times and came back, like, 10 minutes later and was having trouble remembering that those three children were even with him.
Yeah.
So.
I'm Wendy. He'd be like, oh, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, or even, of course you are. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Peter!
Buddy, try to stick with me.
That would be really frustrating if you had to live with that shit.
Oh my god.
I could not handle that. Scott is forgetful enough for me. I do not need a Peter Pan.
Just grab him and shake him. So, questions?
Yeah. I guess what we were talking about earlier is what's the moral of the story?
Yeah, what's the big takeaway here?
Because both of us kind of got to the end and went,
It really was a weird, bittersweet ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For, like, such a silly story. So, if you could explain that to us,
yeah,
we would appreciate it.
So, our verdict is cute, I think.
Yeah, it's cute.
It was fun. It actually made me laugh out loud a couple times.
Yeah, it is funny, and I can see why children really like the story, because I think it does a good job of capturing a child's imagination.
Yeah.
I do think it's a... overall a touch too kid oriented. Like, it doesn't dip its toe enough into the, like, adult waters for me to be, like, as meaningful, maybe.
To think of it as more than, like, a fun story.
Yeah.
I can see there are elements of the story that make a lot of sense as to why it lasted, because I think there are probably, I could probably come up with stories that directly relate to some of those elements. Like the Land of Imagination.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure there are several kids' stories based on that idea.
Yeah.
Especially if this was the forerunner to all of those, which it probably was.
Probably, yeah.
As far as it being a substantial piece of literature where I'm going to go like, oh yeah, this is like one of my top five favorite stories. So, yeah, probably not.
So, yeah, just if anyone's like, I want to read Peter Pan for the depth, you don't do that.
Yeah. But if you just want to read it because you haven't read it, do it. It's really fun.
It won't take you that long.
Yeah.
It's pretty short.
Yeah. All right, so what are you reading right now?
I started Dance with Dragons by...
Germ!
I decided it was about damn time I caught up to these books. I mean, I'd probably have another couple of years before I'd be in danger of not being caught up.
Yeah, before you start getting TV spoilers for the books.
Yeah.
Instead of the other way around.
Yeah, who knows when that's going to come out, so...
Yeah.
But I did start it, so I'm like 50 pages in... I have, like, another 9 million to go.
Look for that to be done sometime in the middle of August.
Yeah.
I am reading a story called Boundary by Eric Flint and Rick E. Spohr, which is quite the name. Look up the spelling on that. Actually, you won't be able to, because Rick is spelled R-Y-K, which is weird. But it's a story about people finding some weird-looking fossils, and then somehow that's tied into Mars. I haven't gotten far enough to know why yet. I just know they're looking at Mars, and that the two are supposed to connect later, according to the back of the book jacket.
Very good detective skills.
Yes, so we'll see. So if you want to talk to us about any of the stuff we've mentioned or didn't mention that you're dying for us to mention.
We completely got Peter Pan entirely wrong.
Yeah, it's possible. Like, the whole thing could be a symbol for some deep societal issue at the time that I'm just not aware of.
Yeah.
But I doubt it.
Alice in Wonderland is apparently a giant commentary on math education.
Interesting.
Which we could save for another day.
But yeah, if you want to tell us about that or ask us a question or, I don't know, even tell us off, really, you can leave a comment on the website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
And we are tweeting fairly regularly now.
Yep, trying to make sure I do it at least a couple times every time I read anything, right?
Really. And I'm throwing some up there, too.
Yeah.
And you can find us on iTunes.
Yeah, and if you do, then rate, review, comment, etc.
etc. etc.
So next week we will be reading Bone Shaker
by Sherry Priest.
Yes,
she's an under 40 science fiction female author, and we went, what? Yeah. Too good to pass up.
And apparently, it's a steampunk zombie. There's one other thing in there, I think, too. But steampunk and zombies, I don't know.
Yeah, how bad can that be?
Yeah. At worst, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think that's going to do it for this week.
Yep.
See you next time.
Bye.